On the Book Show with your host, Dave Doc Kirby.
Well, we've got a real fun show for you today on the bookshelf, a little more lighthearted than our usual fare. Our special guest today is Sean Kenny. His new book, Captain Pike Found Alive, Sean Kenny's Odyssey as an iconic character in the original Star Trek TV series and beyond. Let me tell you how the interesting story of how serendipitously we had the chance to be talking today. A year ago, my youngest son, Scott, was on a business trip on an airplane, and he found himself sitting next to one of the original cast members of Star Trek, Sean Kenny, who introduced himself to him and gave him some autographed bookmarks. Scott shared with Sean Kenny about the fact that when they were little kids, he and his brother Sean, that we took him to Star Trek conventions kind of in South Alabama, and we met Mark Leonard, who played Sarek, Spock's dad. We met Walter Koenig, who was Chekhov, and a couple of other guys. And I had met James Doohan when he did a kind of an interesting tour back in 1977 with blooper reels. I wondered now in retrospect if they weren't trying to get a talk up again about Star Trek because the movie was coming out. But anyway, Sean played Captain Pike in The Menagerie. And that's not the only role he's ever played, of course, but that became a point of contact for them. And because of that, almost a year later, here we are getting a chance to talk to Sean Kenny on the bookshelf. So I'm really tickled to welcome him to On the Bookshelf. His book is Captain Pike Found Alive, Sean Kenny's Odyssey as an iconic character in the original Star Trek series and beyond. So, Sean, welcome to On the Bookshelf.
Hey, thank you, Doc. I'm glad to be here. I loved meeting your son. He was very, very... I love when people ask questions, and he was very, didn't talk as much about himself, which is really nice when they ask you, well, what did you do, and what did you do, and blah, blah. And he's like you. He's a great investigator, your son. Very, very nice young man.
Well, thank you.
My role in that was, of course, Captain Pike. They call it the Crippled Pike, Doc, because Jeffrey Hunter played the original in the pilot, which was called The Cage.
Right.
But then I also was rewarded by Gene for putting up with all the, it was a lot of work with that role because I had to be in makeup so many hours during the day, and we had 8 days of shooting straight. And he decided to make me also an additional character, which was the first helmsman on the show as Lieutenant T'Pol.
Right.
So I just wanted to add that. And that's how I got into showbiz, actually, a film. I did a student film at the time, prior to that, and I was doing a bunch of plays, and I got discovered in a playhouse one night when an agent came backstage and asked me if I had an agent. And I said no, and she said, well, you did such a great job on this show, and I think your look is what a gentleman at Paramount would like to have in his show. And I said, who's that? And he said, Gene Roddenberry. And I said, I don't know who he is. And she said, oh, you'll know who he is very soon. So that's how I got to get over to Paramount and meet Gene Roddenberry.
Now, it's really is lovely to read the interaction that you guys had. I have read about Roddenberry before. I knew he was a policeman at one time, and knew he wrote for during the golden age of radio. He wrote scripts for Gunsmoke and so forth. And yes. Of course, most of us who are Star Trek fans have heard the story about how he pitched it to Paramount as a wagon train in space, which getting to work with him, getting to meet him, to find out that he was such a nice guy and he was very gracious towards you guys. I loved, he appreciated the fact that you were stuck in this character where the only acting you could really do was with your eyes for 8 days. And you're trapped in this thing, and with this hideous scar on the side of your face, and you tell the story of this scar, and this is another thing that's so fun about a book written by people who are in the business. You were in makeup originally like 5 hours every morning to put all this stuff on, right?
That is correct. It was the first day they were trying things, and also when you're young, your skin doesn't stretch as well, and they had to put latex on you, and then they would hit you with a hairdryer. What it is, looks like rubber cement. Put it on your, they put it on your forehead and put it on your cheeks, and then they'd hit it with a hairdryer, and they'd pull your skin at the same time prior to the hairdryer and let it go. And then when the skin came back to its normal position, it had lines in it.
Ah.
So this is a this was an effect they did in the 60s. They now have since outlawed latex because it's carcinogenic.
Nice to know.
So, but when you're young and it's your first big job and you say, oh, I'm not allergic to latex, so, and he asks me, oh, are you claustrophobic? We have to put rubber hoses up your nose. We're going to make a face mask out of plaster Paris on your face. And are you claustrophobic? I said, no, I'm fine. And, oh, by the way, we're going to tape your mouth down. Are you allergic? Like, well, do you have to eat constantly? Because what we're going to do is probably feed you through a straw for those 12 hours that you're working. And I said, oh, no, I'm fine with that. No problem. When you get a job like that, you know you're going to be the lead actor in the show, but have no lines. That was the really funny part about it. But you have no lines. But you have to act through your eyes, he said. You have to act through your eyes. And he says, you have the exact eyes I feel of Jeffrey Hunter, which I look pretty much like him.
Mm-hmm.
So
mm-hmm.
That's how it came about.
And he respected the fact that you didn't complain, that you put up with all this agony of having this, essentially having your face shrink wrapped. And at one point, didn't one of the guys working on you cut off a piece of his denim jean and glue that on your face to save the time, and that cut the amount of time that it took to put you in makeup by almost an hour by having this big thing that they could just glue to your head every day.
That is correct, because the first scar they drew on my face, it was like a dog leg, and it was on the right side of my face going from above my ear down to my chin. It melted because all they did is add a lot of makeup and a little bit of putty, and it just started to drip. And from they used 5K lights at the time, which are very hot incandescent lights. They didn't have halogen lights like they do now. So sure enough, within the first day and the first 2 hours, it was melting. And the director said, we got to change this. We got to do something. Either change it, keep dabbing it, I don't know. And then one of the young guys, the main guy, I'll give him credit, Ray Sebastian, was incredible. He was 26 years old. And he said, I got an idea. And Freddie Phillips was the makeup guy. He says, here, and he puts his leg up on the table, and he drew with a white crayon, like a dog leg, on his leg, on the lower portion of the jeans. Took a pair of shears, and he cut it out, and it was regular blue jeans, and he put it on the side of my face, and he said, look, if we put spirit gum on this, it'll probably hold, and in fact, it might have a little edge on the end, which makes it look a little more scar-like. And Freddie said, genius. He says, oh, my God, that's right, radiation scars, they kind of look like they're still only floating on the face. They don't look, you know, they look scabby, and so all of a sudden it was like a treasure to have this thing. So they take it out. I take it off every day, and unfortunately I couldn't go home with the makeup. And when I went home, because my hair was stone white, my eyebrows were white, people were having a lot of empathy for me when I go out, you know, on my own, like when I didn't have to, like on the weekend.
Yeah.
I went down a place, and I'm walking around, and I'm wondering why people are staring at me, and then I realized they thought I was an albino because I was so white-haired and white eyebrows that, you know, it was like empathy. Oh, and I'm very light-skinned, so getting back to the scar, on the last day, we were so tired, it was the eighth day, and this is the irony of the whole thing, and I looked up, and they put it on me, and they got the makeup on me, and they got the, you know, the spirit gum on me. And I look up and I said, what's wrong with this picture? And I said, hey, guys, you know what? I think the scar's on the wrong side. And they went, oh, my God. Oh, we would have been fired. Oh, they would have been shooting and shooting. You know, it's $10,000 a minute. And that budget was $10,000 a minute of film.
Wow.
So, I'll never forget that moment. They cringed. And they all of a sudden took it off, and they had to rebuild my side that had the scar, and then they had to put the other side. And they were like an hour late that last day to get into the final shot. But anyway, that's the story of the scar.
I love the fact that he gave you the opportunity to play a role with your own face and everything for a while, that you were on two of the really excellent episodes, Arena and A Taste of Armageddon, two of my
That's correct.
Really, really great ones. The arena is the one where that we always see excerpts from that, where Kirk is fighting the tiny Godzilla.
Yeah, the Gorn captain.
Right, and I do remember when I watched the series, seeing you on it, and then all of a sudden you weren't, and Chekhov was there, and that was one of those political considerations. I love the fact that Gene Roddenberry comes to you and says, "I'm really sorry about this, but I'm kind of in a crack here." He treats you with a great affection and respect. That really made me feel good, that because it would have been just as easy for him to say, "Hey, I'm sorry, this is the way it works. It's been swell. See you later." And that'd be the end of it. But he treated you better than that, and you said he gave you a nice recommendation to other people in the business, so that mm-hmm. you started working again almost immediately.
Yeah, within about 2 weeks, I had an interview for Get Smart, and I played a lieutenant. That's what's interesting about Hollywood. People think Hollywood is just full of nepotism, but I'm telling you, it has to do with money, and it has to do with budget. When you know somebody is a good actor, and you know that he's off that show, and you have a friend that says, oh yeah, that guy worked for me a couple of weeks back, or that gets around, and they go, well, I'm going to use him.
Yeah.
And that's how it works, and it's like I would always get jobs in threes. If I did one good job, I would get two more. So it's not that people, it's a click. It's just that it's easier to hire an actor. You don't have to interview.
Sure.
You can go and watch him who's been on a show. You go, oh, yeah, he fits what I'm looking for. And then they say, oh, he was no trouble at all, because he did prima donnas, I'm telling you. But you get people that are so nervous. And I always found out, being an actor all those many years of going on interviews, that the more you appear to be so conciliatory and wanting to help the director or the casting director or whatever, it's so weird in this town. They interpret it as you're really kissing butt because you're not that good. Isn't this funny?
Because you're too available.
Yes. And I learned from an old-timer, this guy, Tex Armstrong, I'll never forget him. He was on Going South with Jack Nicholson. Jack directed him. I became a real good friend. He lived near me in Tarzana, where I live. And Tex said to me, you know what I do? He says, when I get in there, he says, and they tell me, they want me to read with another actor. I said, oh, I look at my watch and I go, you know what? I got another interview over at Paramount in about 2 hours. So I'm going to have to pass, gentlemen. And he was from Killeen, Texas, this guy. And I said, that's a clever thing to say. And he said, no. He said, then you'll just take off and say, thank you, gentlemen. And when you leave that room, they'll go, you know what? He's going to another interview. Somebody's going to grab him. We better put him in this park.
And that makes sense, too.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. So I put that out to all the young actors out there now. Don't be so available that you're kissing butt, because that's not the way to go.
Right. I enjoyed so much all of the showbiz stories that you told, all the places that you got to go. And I particularly like the fact that you are so positive about the people that you work with. You talk about working with Gary Lockwood, right?
Mm-hmm.
And
go
Gary
ahead.
Was in the second pilot that was shot, I think.
That's correct.
For the original series.
Gary sold the show. I was just with Gary last week. Now, I didn't work with Gary in Star Trek. We just did a movie last year called Unbelievable together, and it's the 40 of the Star Trek actors. In fact, it was shown in Vegas while I was there, and they're looking for a distributor, and it's just a hoot of a comedy, and they're looking for a distributor, so they showed it at the Palms, and they had a big audience, so they'll get it out there. It might go to DVD real quick. But Gary was asked, after doing The Lieutenant, that Roddenberry, I'll never forget how he said, he told him, he said, look, I've got this chance to do my Star Trek thing again. He said, oh, really? And they were up drinking Jack Daniels up at his house, because Gary and he were friends as well. And he said, yeah, well, I'm heading off to London in about a month to work with Stanley Kubrick on 2001. He said, I need you in this part of it's going to be I think his name was Gary Mitchell. You're going to be this Star Trek officer that comes on board the ship, and then all of a sudden gets hit by these demons and these aliens, and they blast you with some phaser kind of thing, and you turn into this godlike character. And Gary cracked me up, and he says and we all know you think you are one anyway. This is what Gene said to Gary Lockwood, and he says, yeah, you're right. Gary Lockwood had a very strong ego. So, and he doesn't deny it, but it's really funny because he got on the show, he did a darn good job, and you can see it. It's called Where No Man Has Gone Before, if you guys in the audience want to go and look at it. And he's got these silver eyes. They put these contact lenses in his eyeballs, and he couldn't see it. He kept lifting his head so he could see under the bottom of them. But it made him look really arrogant because he had his chin up all the time.
Oh, right, sure.
Yeah, remember that?
So, yeah, that's right.
Sally Kellerman was in it with him, you know, who was what's-his-name in MASH later.
Yeah,
and so long story short, he said he got over to England and he met Sean Connery. Sean let him stay in his apartment while he was working on 2001. And you know, he was mixing with some really high-profile people over there. And one of the guys comes on the show of 2001. This is about 6 months later. And he says, Mr. Lockwood. And he says, yeah, Charles, how are you? And he says, fine. He says, I was just in America, and I saw you on a show. It's called Star Trek. And he goes, what? He says, no, you're the biggest thing. He says, it's all over the whole tube. It was so funny. British guy told me that he made the whole show happen. And Gary goes, oh, that piece of, oh, I'm sorry, you know. So isn't it funny how, you know, not to get off the subject, but he told me an interesting thing about Kubrick. Kubrick was really an American, and he passed himself off almost as British. You know, lived in London, did all his movies in England and everything, but he was afraid of flying. And he said, well, how did he do 2001 going all over the world? And he says, no. He directed those scenes in Africa with the apes, you know, in the beginning when they throw the bone in the air. He directed it by phone.
Wow. Now, that's got to be pretty interesting. Back in those days, before you had all the technological stuff you could use now.
Yep. He says, well, what are they doing now? Oh, they're moving along the rocks, and they're climbing, and they're kind of humping and going. And he goes, oh, no, have them throw something in the air. You know, I mean, can you imagine? He's on the phone, and he's telling the AD in Africa. They filmed it in Tanzania somewhere. And it ended up working.
Yeah.
But I got to plug Gary's book. He's going to be out with it next year. It's 50 years, 218 for 2001. It's 50 years next year.
Wow.
So he's going to have his book out.
Well, cool.
Yep.
Now, in case you're joining us late, we're talking to Sean Kenny. His new book is Captain Pike Found Alive, Sean Kenny's Odyssey as an Iconic Character in the Original Star Trek TV Series and Beyond. This is from Outskirts Press, and people can find it
on Amazon. Yeah, and I'm getting 5 out of 5. I'm so floored. People like it, and
yay.
You know, you can't be objective about your own story.
No,
you think, oh well, this is my local vida, as we say here in California.
Uh-huh.
My crazy life. Yeah, and so I'm really pleased, and my wonderful wife Taki did the editing, and she advised me on, like you said, Doc, the chronological order is intact.
Yes.
That way it can, because actors, you know how we jump around, tell different stories. But I wanted it to be a memoir, you know, like I'm sitting in a room and more of a narrative, Doc.
Yeah.
A narrative. That's the way it is.
I remember when Star Trek first came out, I was in junior high school. We were just stunned. The other stuff that was out there, Star Trek was just worlds ahead. And you had the opportunity to be with all kinds of people throughout your career and do a lot of interesting things. You did some modeling. You've done photography and met all kinds of people that way. I liked the anecdotes you talk about meeting Tom Selleck and working. You guys had an interesting connection, both involved in a product that neither one of you used, but they paid you well to be in the ads.
Yeah, he was a sale man. I was a Winston man, R.J. Reynolds. And another thing about Tom that's interesting, the first movie Tom ever did, I was the lead in it as the lead heavy. Tom was really one of the protagonists, and he had a beard in the show, and it was about Terminal Island prisoners put off California on these islands where the prisons had filled up. How ironic that is, huh? Mm. Like 20, 30 years later,
really?
Schwarzenegger's asking other states to take our prisoners.
Yeah,
that was weird. So this is directed by a woman, Stephanie Rothman, the first director, I think woman director, to direct a feature film. And of course, this was the time when we used to call them exploitation films came out. Billy Jack was the most prominent one of them.
Right.
Right. And they were made for like $200,000, maybe a quarter of a million, maybe a half a million. And they'd get up-and-coming actors, breakout films. You know, that was Tom's breakout film. And it was mine, too, for a film. And it was really interesting how he and I did four things together. Tom did 11 pilots, and I congratulated him when I went to Hawaii, and he was doing finally, what's that one he did on
Magnum P.I.
Yeah, Magnum. Yeah. And he said, "Sean, this is my 11th. I said, "Dude, you're 11th. Well, he was a big guy with a voice that went like that. Remember, it cracked a little?
Right.
And Tom, we'd joke about it in a way, and we'd say, "Yeah, he's a big guy. He's 6'4". All the women on Magnum had to be at least 5'7", 5'8", because they put him on apple box.
Right, they looked like little Fuchsians next
yeah,
to him.
Yeah, because they had to walk along with him, you know, in certain scenes.
Right.
But Tom was so happy that he got that 11th pilot, was the lucky one. Of course, he made millions on that show. It was weird because when he got the show, it was so strange. Here's how he got the show.
Okay.
And I don't want to get off track, but the guys from Hawaii Five-O were leaving the island. They had just finished Jack Lord. They had wrapped it all up, right? And they're sitting there at the Outrigger Canoe Club or one of those places along the beach, and they're saying, "Yeah, man, we love Hawaii. Yeah, I've established. I bought a couple of condos here." And, you know, these guys were there for years with Hawaii Five-O.
Right.
And all of a sudden they said, "We need to write something new. We got to get a new, maybe a crime, but kind of like a detective, maybe with a little more humor." You know, Hawaii Five-O didn't have enough humor in it. We need to get somebody like maybe a British guy that comes and he's kind of like a detective from England. That's how the role got thought up with,
right.
You know, with Higgins, remember?
Right.
And then Larry Minetti was a little guy, an Italian guy from New York who did this. And then they came up with Roger Moultrie. Well, I suggested Roger Moultrie to Tom because he worked as my henchman in Terminal Island. Terminal Island was just on Turner Classic, by the way.
Oh, no
kidding. It was on two nights in a row. Yeah, Terminal Island. I play a real heinous guy. I mean, I'm awful in it. You know, I'm a killer. Right. Everybody's a capital criminal on the island. And
right,
we pair off. Okay, so getting back to Hawaii Five-O and then Tom Selleck, the guy's about ready to leave, and they said, "Yeah, we need to get a new, younger actor, maybe a new guy." And the guys all go like, their eyes shift over to the sand, and they're looking up, and a guy's playing volleyball, and it's Tom Selleck. It's a true story. And they go, "What? We need a guy like him." And Tom's father had a condo on the beach, near the beach. Tom's father was a coal banker, big agent, you know. Yeah,
okay.
And so somebody sent somebody over, and he says, "Are you an actor?" And he says, "Yeah, I'm an actor." And he goes, "Well, wait a minute, who's your agent?" And he had an agent, same agent for 20 years, she was a woman. And he said, "Well, she's in Hollywood, her name is Adele, so-and-so, so-and-so." "Oh, okay, but would you be interested in..." "Yeah, I live here part of the year, my dad owns a condo over there." And he goes, "You have any credits?" "Yeah, I guess he told him, "Yeah, I've got 3 or 4 credits, you know. Like, how about 9 pilots or 10,
yeah.
Right? So that's how he got the job. Wild.
Wow, crazy.
Yeah.
You were at a convention last week, and there's a neat story in your book, Captain Pike Found Alive, how you found out about the conventions and got kind of into the convention world.
I was driving down the street in Scottsdale. My son was born in Scottsdale, and my wife and I had moved out of L.A. We thought we'd get another place outside of Los Angeles, and our friend had a really nice place for us over in Scottsdale, so we liked it a lot, and she got pregnant. We have a baby from that year, 1989, and we said, "Wow, oh," and I looked up one day, and I was driving down the street alone, and I saw a banner, look handmade, across the street in Phoenix, and it said Star Trek. It didn't say convention, it said Star Trek Expo.
Ah, okay.
That's how they called it. And I thought, what the hell is that? And I stopped my car, parked it, walked into this hotel, a small hotel, like Holiday Inn or something like that. And sure enough, they had some handmade signs, you know, "Come on in. We want all the Trek fans." And they didn't call themselves Trekkies at the time. And I go up to the desk, and the guy's there, and he's got a handmade shirt on, like the one I wore on the show, and says, "Oh, hi, you want to come in?" He says, it's 2 days only. This is our first day Saturday. We're going to be Sunday. And I said, "Yeah." I said, "Yeah, you know what? It really interests me. I was in the show." He says, "What? You were in the show?" I said, "Yeah, I play one of the characters in the show." "What?" He goes, "You're kidding me." I said, no, no, I was Captain Pike. He goes, what? You were Captain Pike? Could you hold on 1 minute? 1 minute. He said, stay right here. So the guy goes into the ballroom or wherever and comes out real quick and he says, we don't have any money to pay you anything or whatever. Would you mind just coming in and be our mystery guest? I said, oh, okay, I'll do it. And so I come in and they hand me this mic right away. And there's a little stage up there. Go up there and if you'll just, you know, talk about Trek and everything. I said, oh, okay. So I go up and then all of a sudden I'm fielded. You know, there must have been maybe 100, maybe 200 people in the whole place, you know.
Right.
But I thought, this is a cool environment. You know, it's 1989. So I'm going, wait a minute. And so here we are, what, 2017? They're still going with these conventions.
Yeah. And bigger all the time.
Absolutely. You know, I want to mention one thing, too, at the show.
Yeah.
We do have a new series. My wife and I have written 12 episodes. Can't tell you the name yet because we're keeping that in abeyance until
okay.
we really push this out. We're going to go to Netflix, but I want all my sci-fi fans to be ready for when it comes out. I've got Jerry Lockwood, myself. I've got Olivia DeVoe, who was the Q in Next Generation.
Mm-hmm.
I've got Hannah Hatte, who was Molly O'Brien in Next Gen, and she was 6 years on Deep Space Nine.
Right.
And Mark Cushman, who was Gene's writing editor and actual story editor on Next Gen. He's our story editor, and we're going to present this to either Hulu and Netflix. So we will let the fans out there know it's going to be this the end of this year. We will announce it. And we've got everything all written, all the episodes.
Wow.
Ready to go.
That's
yep.
very cool.
You'll be invited, Doc, to the red carpet, okay?
I will be there.
Yeah.
Well,
you will be there, and your son. I want your son to come, Sean.
Excellent, excellent.
Yep.
Well, I tell you what, when you get ready to announce it, you know, I'll want to call you back, and we'll do another interview, okay?
Absolutely.
Cool.
Absolutely. We feel real strong about it. And we have, oh, and we're going to have guest stars almost every week from Star Trek to different shows.
Neat.
In fact, I talked to John DeLancey the other day. He said, Sean, I'm on. John Hertzler, who played one of the lead Klingons, John
right.
Hertzler.
Yeah.
He's, I'm on, Sean. I'm with you, man. I want to work with you. But see, all of us are parts. We're all a fraternity.
Yeah.
Brothers and sisters. Celeste Yarnell, who was in The Apple. I've got all these actors. They're still vibrant. They're still good. And they're going to be in the shows.
Wow. That is really neat. People are going to be so excited to see this show and see wonderful, familiar faces once again. That's going to
exactly
be great.
Right. And we got 23 million fans, Doc, around the world now. Can you believe that, Tally? 23 million.
That's larger than a lot of countries I've visited.
I know. Now, if you were Netflix, wouldn't you want to throw money at this?
Oh, yeah. I'm saying.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's current. So anyway, well, I'll let you go, my friend. And
thank you.
And thanks that wonderful audience out there for tuning in to us here.
Absolutely. Thank John Kenney, our guest today. His new book is Captain Pike Found Alive. Sean Kenney's Odyssey as an Iconic Character in the Original Star Trek TV Series and Beyond. And there's a lot of very, very important personal stuff that Sean talks about very candidly in the book, and we didn't get a chance to touch on that, but it really helps you to see what has shaped him to be the man that he is, and not just an entertainer, but the good man that he is. And once again, available on Amazon, and look for the book. It's a great read. And thank you again, Sean. It's great to get a chance to talk to you.
And everybody, I mean it, live long and prosper. I mean, it's a cliche, but it's not.
It's still
okay?
A good one, isn't it? That's right.
Isn't it?
Okay. Thank you, Sean. Appreciate it,
man. Thank you, Doc. Have a great one.
You too. Our thanks again to Sean Kenney, the author of Captain Pike Found Alive. Sean Kenney's Odyssey is an iconic character in the original Star Trek TV series and beyond. It's available from Amazon.com or Amazon Kindle. You want an autographed copy, go to CaptainPikeFoundAlive.com. We'll take up a more serious topic next week, but thanks for joining us for a fun interview today on The Bookshelf. Until then, I'm your host, Dave Doc Kirby. Thanks so much for listening, and God bless.